show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, that's us. Welcome back. Another edition of the aforementioned Bucket Strategy Investing program. It's your source for the best in money advice every day right here. Brain Trust standing by, ready to talk with you. Professor Rick Plum, he's here with me, Johnny Dean from Lucia Capital Group, as we are every day. Going to get started with a discussion on something that we feel very, very close to, and that is choosing a financial advisor or financial planner or whatever you want to call them. How do you know what to look for in an advisor? You need to choose carefully, of course, the person who's going to be managing your finances and your retirement portfolio. But really, honestly, how do you know if the person sitting across from you telling you to invest with them is really looking out for your best interests? They're supposed to be, but are they? It helps to, I suppose, interview the advisor and know ahead of time what to look for. So we're going to talk about that, how they're paid. We have this whole fee versus commission, that kind of thing. And it's important to understand what it is you're paying and what sort of services you're getting. So that's all coming up right here on the program with Professor Rick Plum. Our number here in the studio, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. If you want to email us, you can do so at our website. That's also known as wealthed.com. It's at the Find Your Answer link near the top part of the page. We'll read and answer your email questions as we always do every day live here on the show. Our in-house Brain Trust advisor, the one we call Professor Rick Plum. Rick is here once again, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. There are many components to putting together a successful retirement, but a big, big part of all of it is having a workable strategy, one that's tailored to meet your individual goals. That's right. Finding the right type of retirement strategy for you right now is as easy as giving the Brain Trust advisors a call. You can do so on the show. You can also reach them off the air at this number, 800-644-1150. Again, if you want to talk off air, 800-644-1150. That's the number at Lucia Capital Group. And we do thank them for bringing us this hour of the program. 877-PLANNER, our number. On the air, PLANNER, whatever you want to talk about. Talk for just a moment about financial advisors, Professor Plum. Now, of course, you are one. The whole, you know, we talk with them all the time. We talk with people who have their own. We talk with people who do their own financial planning, or maybe some combination of the both. I guess I asked this question. Maybe we'll just throw it right out. How are you supposed to know that whoever is managing your money has your best interests in mind?
Well, I wish there was one question or a series of questions that you could ask and be able to get a clear-cut answer whether or not the person was working in your best interest or not. Unfortunately, some people are very good at disguising what's actually going on. You know, that's an unfortunate issue with the people that we deal with every day throughout any industry. Whether you're taking your car to a mechanic, how do you know that what that mechanic is telling you is, first off, what was wrong with the car? Second, the repair that they're doing is really needed. And how do you know? Unfortunately, it takes time to build up that trust. And you have to go through it, in many respects, to figure out whether or not that's going to work for you. Same thing with picking a financial advisor. There is no one set way to be compensated as a financial advisor. Now somebody's out there going, well, they shouldn't be compensated at all. You know, the more you pay in fees, the less your return is, right? And that's the way the do-it-yourself houses are promoting them. They want you to not have an advisor, so they have an agenda because they want you to work your money through them.
But they're getting paid
either way. But the question is, can an advisor actually add value to what you're doing? And in many cases, they can. In some cases, they can't. You talk about somebody, a young person just starting off with, you know, with their 401k, it's very difficult to pay somebody enough money to make it worth their while to spend any reasonable amount of time talking to a 25-year-old that's putting money only into their 401k, and how are they going to get paid? I mean, they put $5,000 away, $2,000 away, and you're going to charge them what, a fee? 1% of $2,000, you're going to get, what, $20? You know, how much time are you going to get an advisor to really help you in those areas? But on the other side, where you've got a portfolio and you've got tax considerations, strategic considerations, doing it yourself in many respects is dollar for dollar cheaper because you're not paying somebody, but is it cheaper in the long run because maybe you're doing things at the wrong time. You're hurting your own performance. So, and that's where even companies like Vanguard have come out and said using an advisor can actually add, even after expenses, to your overall return, because they can help you stop being you and help you from not selling when the market's down a lot, not buying when the market's on fire and you have to get in, help you not put things in the wrong place, sell at the wrong time potentially, create taxes that you don't need to pay, and other things. So all those things, which are very difficult to actually quantify and put into dollars, where it's easy to see what you're paying in a fee, how much did I actually earn by using an advisor? There's another side of it too, that the peace of mind of knowing that you have at least a sounding board to work with that helps you at manage your money. There's a peace of mind that, you know, with having a strategy that you can't really put a dollar amount on. It's difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you choose your financial advisor? Do you choose somebody who is a fee only charge a fee? There was a big movement towards fee only. And this was back in the 80s and 90s, and the fee only that they were trying to get people to move towards was more of the CPA type of approach or the attorney type approach, where they just charged you an hourly rate. They didn't charge you a percentage of assets. They didn't charge you a commission. They just charged you a fee for the plan itself. And unfortunately, nobody could actually make that model work that I've ever seen, because the fee that they had to charge to run an office was so high that nobody would pay it. And then even after you pay the fee, if you were to pay a fee, now what do? Are you comfortable with managing it yourself? You've got to go out and find somebody to help you manage it, and they're going to charge you a fee or a commission to do it. So unfortunately, the big push and where the term fee only came from was, you know, basically charging a flat fee for the plan or an hourly rate. And so what that has morphed into is a percentage, a fee, which is a percentage of assets managed, a 1% fee, 0.5%, 1.5%, whatever the case may be. And so it has moved over towards that type of model, where if we charge an ongoing fee, that must be more beneficial to the client. We're on the same page. The more money you make, the more money the advisor makes. If they're making 1% or whatever the fee is they're charging, when your portfolio goes down, their income goes down. When the client's portfolio goes up, their income goes up. So they're on the same side of the page with you, right? I mean, it does make sense. But not everything lends itself to a fee arrangement. You've got, on the other side, would you want to buy a CD with a fee arrangement? It's part of the net worth to be charged an ongoing fee. So you've got maybe, you've got a $1 million portfolio and you want to put $100,000 in a CD. What's a CD earning today? Not much. What about a fixed annuity, a fixed guaranteed annuity? You can get a fixed annuity that's paying for 3 years, you can walk away at that, that's earning, you know, just shy of 2%. But what if I'm paying a fee on that? If it's part of my fee, you know, overall management, it's part of the plan, so I'm charging you a fee to do it.
Yeah, so
now I'm charging you 0.5%, 0.75%, maybe 1%. So you're back down to only earning 0.9% on that.
So I've got a $1 million portfolio, 100,000 CDs, another 100,000 in some kind of an annuity that you're mentioning right there. And I'm being charged a fee on that $200,000.
Right, and I'm actually not earning as much as I could do by not having a fee. And all you're going to do is buy it and hold it for 3 years. It would be better for the insurance company to pay a commission, because let's say the commission is 2%. That's cheaper than somebody paying 1% a year to hold onto that money on a fee basis. But do you think that the insurance company, if they don't pay that 2% fee, is going to raise the cost that they're going to raise it a little bit, maybe a quarter point. So instead of 1.9, you're in 2.2, but then you're paying a fee to get that managed, held onto. So you're actually behind the eight ball. So how you go about doing it is not in the consideration of fee or commission. I have met some wonderful people who were only licensed to use products that had a commission with them. They were very much on the inside of the investor. They did in what was right for the investor. And I've met some horrible, you know, salespeople in the commission arena. And on the other side, in the fee area, same thing. I've met some wonderful people who are very good at their job, helping people do what they need to do. And then I've also met people that no matter what your issue is, they're going to charge you a fee to fix it, even if they really shouldn't have.
What are you saying? Is somebody charging a fee on everything the person owns?
I've seen that. I talked to somebody a couple years ago now who was looking for a new financial advisor because their previous financial advisor was charging them a flat fee on their net worth. They had a net worth statement done every year. The net worth included home equity, cars, all this other stuff that had nothing to do with this individual actually helping them manage their investment portfolio. But that was, they were supporting the fee.
I mean, do they disclose this? They have to.
In the fee arrangement, right up front. I mean, but you, how many people actually read every word of a contract?
Which is why they should.
Exactly why they should read it.
And even if you don't understand, there is something that we like to talk about, Professor Baum, which we can do after the break, among other things. Full disclosure, how an advisor gets paid.
It's the person that's helping you. Not necessarily the way they're compensated.
Right. So we'll tell you what we mean when we say full disclosure and all that. This is important stuff. It's things that you need to know if you're considering hiring a financial advisor, even if it's for only part of your portfolio or all the money that you have. Okay, take your phone calls, too. We got lines open, 877-PLANNER. If you got a question on anything at all, lines are open right now. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. Taking your calls, it is Bucket Strategy Investing. Taking your calls, 877-PLANNER, taking your emails at wealthed.com. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing, talking to you about your money, any money question that you have at all, doesn't matter what it is, Social Security, insurance, annuities, retirement, saving for college, rental properties, 1031s, 1035s, corporations, we can handle it all right here. Whatever's on your mind, whatever is bugging you, whatever is bothering you, you just give us a call right now. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. So we were talking before the break. I mentioned this particular, and I don't know if people have heard of this or not. Full disclosure, when you talk to an advisor, in my opinion, and I don't know about yours, you can say, but in my opinion, if you use this process of something called full disclosure, you're actually probably being most open and honest about how this person is getting paid. Talk about what that is.
Well, I don't think it's an actual industry term, full disclosure, something that a number of people have used. We've used it with our practice. And it's just basically being upfront and saying, we think that this is the best investment product to fill this portion of your strategy. It pays us a commission. It pays us, or it pays the broker, it pays the company, it pays, there is a fee involved, and this is how it's being paid. This is how the individual who is making the recommendation is being compensated for making this recommendation. Fee, commission, whatever the case may be. So no matter how it is. Now, I also think that you take that full disclosure thing one step further, because one of the common practices in the fee-only area is to say, we only charge 1%. Yeah, that's what the broker is charging you, but that doesn't tell you everything that you're paying. There's also potentially a platform fee where the assets are being held that covers the trading costs and things of that nature. There's a specific individual or a team of people managing the money, determining whether to buy or sell a specific security at this particular moment. Generally, the individual that you're talking to at the branch office or in their own individual office is not the one making the choices on which Chinese stock to buy or sell. At least I hope they're not doing that for you, because they don't have the time to do that. So there is the planner who does the macroeconomic side of it, and then there's the individual money manager who does the micro money management in the investment accounts themselves. And so there's fees for all of that. And so one of the common ways that a fee-only advisor can make you believe you're paying less is by saying, I charge one, but I'll charge you 0.75. But he doesn't say, that's only part of it. What are you really paying for everything? Another 50 basis points for that, another 10 basis points for this. So the idea of full disclosure, in my mind, is to tell you not only what the individual is or the company is being paid for making the recommendation, but what you're actually paying out of pocket, so you can make a decision on whether or not you believe there's enough value in it for what you're trying to accomplish. But the whole idea is to let you know what the compensation, or that there is compensation, so that you can really take a look at it and say, okay, they're recommending that I do this for the following reasons. Boom, boom, boom. Is that what I need? Is that what I really want? Is that really what's best for me? And it gives you an opportunity to say, well, what about using something like this instead of what you're recommending? Well, the reason we did not recommend that was because we don't get paid for it. No, that's not the right answer. The reason that we're not recommending that is because the characteristics of that investment have more risk, have less return potential, have this, have that, have an adverse tax consequence.
So this is the back and forth.
So that you know that what the recommendation is does work best for what you're trying to accomplish. and it makes sense. And I think it helps put people on the same side of the page as much as anything it can out there.
Now, but aren't there a lot about that just they don't really even want to bring up the discussion of how I'm being compensated? When they recommend something and here's who's paying me, here's what I get out of it.
If you're going to see a financial advisor, one of the questions you should ask or you should have answered, hopefully they're upfront about it and they'll tell you even before you ask, is, so what is this costing me? Because you want to know, am I getting something in return for what you're going to charge me? What is the benefit? What is the cost? They're telling you all the benefits. The advisor is telling you, this is a benefit. This is what's going on. This is what's happening. So what am I paying for this? How are you getting compensated for making this recommendation? Now, I do believe an advisor should be compensated for the recommendations that they make and that you follow. When they make a recommendation, they are putting themselves out, and it's a liability issue where I'm making a recommendation. I have to show that I've done the due diligence and the background and the understanding of the issue that I'm making. There's a lot of things that go into making a recommendation, and there's a liability when a recommendation is made just in case it isn't suitable. So that's why you want to make sure that it is suitable when you're an advisor. So all these things go into play. But yeah, an advisor spends a lot of time, hopefully, educating themselves into the different areas. Just something as simple as picking out a fixed annuity or a fixed index annuity, understanding all the different strategies, understanding how they set their cap rates in an index annuity. Do they use a portfolio rate or a new money rate? It sounds like, what is that all about? Well, portfolio rates work really well when interest rates are coming down. That's the way they set their, a new money rate works really well if interest rates are going to be moving higher. Which way does that company set their rates? Takes time to do that kind of research.
Well, it takes time, and how is the average person even going to know to ask about something like
that? They don't, and that's why it's very difficult for the average person to do it by themselves. And that's unfortunately why the average person, in some cases, gets taken advantage of in these areas. There's a big movement right now within the Department of Labor and others, FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, to create a one-size-fits-all standardized definition and have everybody adhere to the same fiduciary standard.
All right, so what are they proposing here? It's not law, but what are they proposing?
Well, they're proposing that there is, like I was just talking about, a one-size-fits-all standard.
Meaning?
Basically, commissions are evil. They should never be charged. And so we can't have anybody charging. They're trying to create, which is admirable, but I don't think it can really be done this way, something that says, following this standard, the advisor is always, and the whole idea is the definition that they want to produce somehow, is that the advisor will only do what's in the client's best interest. And that sounds very noble, very good, but it's very difficult to regulate behind that. So what does that mean, that they will only act in the best interest? There are those that believe that acting in the best interest is only offering the lowest cost investment in the world. Well, that means that any active mutual fund just got aced out. Can never happen. It has to be exchange traded funds or index funds because they're the lowest cost. And by the way, the only way to do that is to do it yourself, because an advisor, if they charge a fee, there is a camp that says fees are the only thing that matter. But that's not the only thing that matters. There's a lot of times that people don't understand the relationship between the different sectors of the markets, and so they take either too much risk or not enough risk based on what they're trying to accomplish. And so an advisor can help them fit that in. So how is that advisor supposed to get paid? Well, the way that it looks right now is that some type of fee arrangement is the only way that'll ever be paid, because commissions are the devil's dirty work. That's just death to anybody. And a commission should never be charged when you look at the way the Department of Labor and FINRA might be looking
Which
at
obviously,
it.
I mean, that can't be the case.
But that's the way they're kind of looking at it. And the Department of Labor, which is basically taking the statute of ERISA, which was created in 1974 to oversee and put requirements into qualified retirement plans, is taking that statement from ERISA in 1974 and saying that any retirement plan, including IRAs, will fall under the Department of Labor's issue. And so they control who can do what in all these types of areas. And so it potentially will take away any type of commission or any type of a lot of incentive for anybody helping you with your IRA money. And I just think that that's going to have a big backlash, because advisors won't be able to help you. And if they're not going to be able to help you and not get compensated for helping you, they're not going to help you. A lot of people can be left on their own.
That's right. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Lines are open right now. Give us a call, 877-752-6637. Any money issue you have, Brain Trust standing by on Bucket Strategy Investing. It was 80s, and this is okay. Yeah. Little romantics for you. Back in my DJ days, right here. Bucket Strategy Investing. Did I say it? Sure, of course.
That's the way to do it.
877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, talking with you, at you, about your money, right here on the program. Going to get some emails in just a couple of moments, and more coming up in future hours as well. And by the way, I also want to just remind you again, we got another workshop or two or three or five or six coming up with Professor Rick Plum, Terry Keyes, and the local Brain Trust advisors, wherever you happen to be. There's going to be another one coming up on Saturday morning, February 20th. That'll be the next one of the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're in Las Vegas, please attend anywhere in Las Vegas. Henderson, the surrounding areas, Clark County. Be there Saturday morning, February 20th. Talk to Professor Plum about your money strategies and learn some stuff. It's really going to be a lot of fun. Saturday the 20th in Las Vegas, February 27th, Seattle, Washington, and March 12th, Phoenix, Arizona. Those are the next three. There are going to be more after that, so if you have any questions about where the Brain Trust will be, you can go to wealthed.com. That's where you sign up, wealthed.com. It is all free, and certainly you want to meet the Brain Trust. Not just learn about bucket strategy and retirement income strategies, but also get your money questions answered. Now, you did do a question answer before. You're still doing that and after? Or is
mostly,
it mainly just after?
Mostly we're doing just after now.
Okay, all right. Well,
because a lot of times we got going into the question answer period
and you're
before, and it was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, so plenty of time to ask your questions. Again, wealthed.com. Our phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER. Anything you want to talk about, 877-752-6637. Emails at wealthed.com. Let's get to Robert in Phoenix, Arizona with a question here. I have 37 years where I have maxed out my Social Security earnings. Met the max earnings tax for the year. That's not bad.
Right, hit the wage base.
That's what it's called, the wage base. I am 62. I am not working. Am I correct to assume that I have maxed out my benefit and it will not be affected by me not working anymore? I'm planning to wait until 69 or 70 to take my Social Security.
Well, if the wage base stays the way it is today, and it did stay the same from 15 to 16, then that is a true statement. Now, if you were to work and the wage base goes from the current 118.5 to 127, 130, whatever it may or may not go to in the next couple of years, you could potentially add a few bucks, and we're talking a few, to your actual benefit. But of course, to add those few dollars to your benefit, you'd have to pay FICA taxes on that $120,000 of income. So you would be paying a lot of taxes to get a little tiny, very little increase in your benefit. For all intents and purposes, you are maxed out. And whether you work or don't work is going to have almost no impact on your benefit going forward. And so if you want to work, help yourself, yeah, go for it and work for it. But if the only reason you may want to work is to create a better Social Security benefit, it is not worth it. I mean, we're talking maybe $5 difference, $10.
Per month.
Per month. And you're going to pay, well, between you and your employer, $15,000 in taxes? Don't do it. So you're pretty much, by all intents and purposes, you've maxed out. You've already, they only use 35 years. They use your best 35 years. You've got 35 years in the books. They've inflation indexed all the years prior to your turning 60 to reflect inflation. So the only thing that's going to affect it going forward is if we get a CPI increase on the cost of living wage base, or not the cost of living, the wage base that we're paying our taxes on. You're going to have to pay a lot of taxes to get a better year in there.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions on that. People asking if they should go back to work. I think there are people who perhaps think that it's they take the last 10 years that you worked, or maybe they've heard of 35, but they think it's the last 35. So if they retire at 62 and don't work but don't take their benefit until age 70, that they're going to have six or seven zeros, which is going to bring down their average.
Right. As long as you've got 35 years, whether it was the first 35 or last 35 years, you don't have a zero in your average. Now, if you and in his case, Robert has maxed out the wage base in at least 35 years. So it's going to be a very, very good benefit. Could it be slightly better? Well, maybe, but is it worth dollars in paying the FICA taxes in and the employer's FICA taxes in versus the dollars coming out? No. And the wage base would have to go up a lot to get that benefit, really. So it's just not worth it.
Okay, Dorothy in Leesburg, Virginia. I'm going to be 75. I just retired June 1st of last year. I am a widow. I took my husband's Social Security and deferred my own until 70. During that time, my own Social Security became worth more than my husband's, but I still stayed on letting mine grow. On your program before, I've heard you explain how someone can pay back Social Security for the benefits and reapply, and somehow in this process they receive more money. I've been to Social Security to ask about this process because I really don't understand under what circumstances a person can do this. No one at my local Social Security office seems to be very knowledgeable, and in fact, recently it took a supervisor at the local office to have my 2014 earnings added into my benefit amount. I might not be explaining this correctly or clearly, but I hope I am. Thank you. Yes, you are, Dorothy.
Yes, Dorothy. And you don't have to worry about it. What you're talking about is not available to somebody who is 75 years old and has been receiving benefits for as long as you've been receiving them. What you're talking about is for somebody who, within the first year of receiving benefits, changes their mind and goes back in and says, I should not have applied when I applied. So I want to rescind my application, pay back what I've received, and then later I'm going to start my Social Security again at some point in the future where it's not as reduced or even potentially it'll be increased because I waited longer to take it. But it's only available now within the first year of taking a benefit. You're 75 years old. It's not going to help at this point. You've been taking benefits for quite a while. It's, 5 years, your own benefits. It's just not going to help you at this point. You've been taking your benefits for more than a year. The idea that also that you had to get a supervisor to add the 2014 earnings, that happens automatically. They may have made the application a little bit sooner than it would have otherwise happened, but that does happen automatically, usually later in the year, and then they give you a retroactive check back to the beginning of the year for the year they're making the adjustment. But it does happen automatically, so they just made it happen earlier than would have otherwise happened. But you would have been paid the money anyway. I saw this last year. A friend of mine brought their benefit statement to me, and they said, what's going on with my benefit? They gave me this increase, they gave me that increase, and I don't know what was going on. Part of it was because about September of last year, or August, September, they had adjusted his earnings for the 2013 earnings year. And they said, okay, for 2015, your benefit should have increased to this. We didn't do it until September, so we're giving you a retroactive payment for the difference for all the way back to January 1. So he got that benefit increase, and then he's like...
But they didn't really explain how
they were going to do it. They didn't explain anything. They just gave him some money, and he goes, am I going to have to pay this back? Did they make a mistake? No, they didn't make a mistake. They actually are giving you the benefit of the fact that they can't catch your earnings right away when it happened. I mean, if you made money in 2015, which becomes one of your best high 35 averages we were talking about before, they don't know about it January 1st, 2016. They haven't even seen your W-2 yet. Until that W-2 is filed in January, and then they can match it up with everything that's going on and then do the calculation to have it done, it takes several months for that to happen. It takes a year for that to happen. But as soon as they can adjust it, they will adjust it automatically.
Yeah, and now speaking of paying back the benefits.
Going back to the original question.
The original question about paying back the benefits. You can still do that. It's changed a little bit.
Right.
But you can still do it. You can change your mind from the first time that you apply for Social Security, but you have to change your mind within the first 12 months.
Within the first 12 months of benefits, yeah. It used to be, before 2008, we could apply at 62, receive our benefits, just put our benefits in the bank account when we could earn some interest, and at age 70, undo it, pay them back all the 8 years' worth of benefits, and pick up our new age 70 benefit going forward. They changed that rule back 2008-ish, I believe, and said, no, we can't, because they weren't requiring you to pay any interest back. So if you were getting $1,000 a month for those, was it 96 months? All you had to do is give them the $96,000 back, even though you earned interest on it all those years, and you got to keep the float in that. They stopped that several years back, and so you have a 1 year window, one time, to undo it. And if you start at 62 and before 63 want to pay it back, you can rescind your application
and then
pay it all back.
It will continue to have grown as if you never applied.
Never applied. And then you apply at 64, you can't undo it again. It's a one and done thing.
Now, what if you just told them I'm going back to work? Because going back to work means that you can't receive the benefit, which does essentially the same thing.
Well, no, it doesn't pay it back.
No, it doesn't pay it back, but I'm saying it suspends your benefit. It suspends it and allows it to grow.
And you're not voluntarily allowed to do that until you're 66. I don't know for a fact, but I believe they asked for a pay stub.
Oh, okay. So they'll say, if you aren't working, you told me you're working, you wanted to stop, we're going to keep sending you the money.
Now we're going to send you the check back.
We're going to force you to take the money. Well, that's a little,
I don't know,
that's
a
change. I don't know about that either. Maybe somebody out there knows. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number. We got some lines open. So if you have a money question, call now. We're here till the top of the hour. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-752-6637. Coming right back. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Got time to get your question in this hour before the top of the hour. More emails coming up as well. Once again, our website, wealthed.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com. Let's get back to the phone lines. Still have two lines open. Pat is next in Stuart, Florida. Hello, Pat.
Hey, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm a bit confused about annuities. I have an annuity. It's identified as a variable annuity, fixed interest rate at 4%. I was told that it's not fixed, Pat, because your advisor gets half of that. Okay, I talked to my advisor about it, and I was told that, no, Pat, it's fixed at 4. So is it or is it not?
Well, you mentioned a couple of things. You said that it was a variable annuity.
Right.
Variable annuities typically don't have fixed rates. Fixed annuities have fixed rates.
I'm sorry.
And a 4% rate today. Now, how long have you had this particular annuity?
Forever, since like 2001.
So a fixed annuity back in those days usually had 3% minimum guarantees. To see a 4% guaranteed fixed rate would be unusual, but not impossible. And the advisor's not getting half of it. Okay, when somebody sells you an annuity, whether it's inside of a TSA, tax sheltered annuity, which is a retirement account, or a 403B, which is the IRS code that outlines what a TSA is, they get paid a commission up front. They don't get and they may get a very small, what they call trail, less than a 0.25% or a 0.25%, something very small each year on an annuity. And they only get really paid again if they sell you another annuity at some point in the future. But so if it is actually paying you 4%, the advisor's not getting half of that number. So but in a variable annuity, this is where it's confusing to me right now, and it'd be interesting if we could talk afterwards and you can send me a copy of the statement so that I can go over it with you to tell you what you do or do not have. Like I said, but if you have a fixed annuity, now 4% is a really good rate if you actually have it. One way to find out is to take your statements, line up your 2015 statement with your 2014 statement. Are you still working and adding money to this, or is this from before?
No. I'm retired.
So take a look at the balance at the end of 2015. Take a look at the balance at the end of 2014. Is the 2015 balance 4% higher than the 2014 balance? If that's the case, you earned 4%. But do you have the statement right in front of you?
I do.
And so it what does it say about variable fixed and all that? Does it have accounts? I mean,
yeah, it's called a variable annuity. And at the bottom, it has fixed interest. And then it, you know, breaks down each area to the dollar amount, purchase, transfer, withdrawals, all that stuff.
That sounds like a variable annuity, and a variable annuity does not have a fixed rate.
Seriously.
Well, I mean, if you're buying into and selling out of different sub-accounts within the variable annuity, that's you're investing in those sub-accounts. They're like mutual funds. They're investments. And investments can go up or down in value during the time that you own it. Now, and when you have a variable annuity, it doesn't have a, well, you're going to get whatever the market does, or an underlying guarantee. So the 4% must be something else. Where does it say 4%?
Well, on the outside of my folder, it's what I have. Fixed at a 4% minimum, no risk.
Okay, that's not jiving with what you're telling me is on the statement. Because the statement says that you're buying into, when it says buying into and selling out of, what are the names of the accounts you're buying into and selling out of?
Well, that I can't tell you because that's not identified on the statement sheet that I'm looking at.
Well, maybe what we need to do.
We're going to have to go over this
yeah,
a little
Pat,
more detail.
I'll tell you what, hold on. If you don't mind, hold on and we'll get your information. And Professor Plum will take a look at these and see what it is that you really have. It's interesting. Now, she said she'd heard from somebody, don't know who, that an advisor is taking 2% off that 4%.
No, the advisor is not. Now, if it is a variable annuity, variable annuities do have fees. Variable annuities, because they also have riders. They have a death benefit that says if the value of the annuity goes down substantially and you die from a certain indexing point or a lock-in point, they will pay the higher number to your heirs. They charge you for that, for the tax-deferred nature of an annuity, for the contract, all these other things. They do charge you for that. And so without a lot of bells and whistles, the typical typical annuity out there probably has about 2% in fees in it. And so 2% of it may be going in fees from the underlying sub-accounts. But that's not true with a fixed annuity. If I bought a fixed annuity way back when that had a 4% minimum guarantee, there are no fees. I get 4% if I could find that product. You can't buy one of those today, by the way. But a variable annuity has fees. A fixed annuity does not have fees unless you add certain riders to them, like a lifetime income or something else. So we need to get to the bottom of this a little more than we can get right here.
Yeah, it doesn't quite make sense.
I understand why she's confused.
Well, I would be confused, too. She says it says fixed 4% on the front, but what does that mean?
Well, that's on her folder. Maybe she wrote that. And they, when she bought it 15, 16 years ago, they were talking about one that had a 4% guarantee, and then she bought something else. Or she bought a variable annuity that had some kind of a 4% roll-up on an income base. That was right at the beginning. 2001 was right at the beginning of income bases, lifetime income benefits, and things of that nature. So there may be a rider on here that had a 4% smoke and mirrors guarantee.
Yeah, see, and this is the problem that people have, and I can understand when people get upset about some of these annuities and say that you should never even consider one of them because they're too confusing. And this goes back to what we were talking about at the top of the hour, Professor Plum, which is know what it is you're buying and know how somebody's getting paid.
Right.
Where the fees are or the commissions or whatever.
And make sure that you actually buy what it is you were talking about that had the guarantees. Unfortunately, that does put some pressure on you. When you receive the contracts, if you were buying an annuity, receive the contract, look it over. Make sure it is what you thought it was. Make sure that it says the guaranteed minimum rate of return on the cash value is X.
If you need the Brain Trust, they are available to you in the form of Professor Plum or any of the Lucia Capital Group advisors across the country. 800-644-1150, 800 800- 844-1150. Talk to them about your financial plan. It's Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.